Tonight we'll be studying Genesis 40 through 41, and because this is March 2020, I am recording this from our home office, so if you hear some background noise, that is why, and I am recording it from our home office instead of us all being gathered together because we are practicing social distancing, as you all know. And I think it's so interesting that we are studying Genesis 40 and 41 during this particular time in history. We probably have limits right now we'd rather not have. We don't have the ability to move around as freely as usual. We don't have our usual opportunities to get together for fellowship. The stores don't look like they usually do. And we may perhaps experience fear and anxiety that we haven't experienced before. In this particular circumstance, the story of Joseph speaks to us. And I'd like to begin with prayer. So Heavenly Father, I pray that you would bless the reading of your word. I pray that you would bless us as we study your word, as we consider how you have worked in the life of Joseph, how you have shown your mercy and your steadfast love to him. And I pray that that would help us to learn more about your character, that you are the same, that your mercy and your steadfast love, that your providence and your timing is always perfect, and it is perfect in our lives as well. Please change us as we study your word, and I pray that you would fill us with courage, with faith, and that you would make us fruitful so that we are able to comfort others in their distress. It's in your name I pray. Amen. So before we dive into Genesis 40, I'd like to recap what has gone on in Joseph's life up to this point, and I'd like to thank Lindsay Huckabee for filling in for me as we studied Genesis 37, 38, and 39 last time, when I wasn't able to teach because of a sore throat and losing my voice. So Lindsay, thank you so much for doing that. So up to this point, the story of Joseph is that he was the favored son of Jacob. He had the coat of many colors, or perhaps the long-sleeved coat, but either way, it showed his status, that he was above his brothers and his father's affection, and perhaps in the jobs that he was given to do. Then he has some dreams that he shares of sheaves that bow down to him, of the sun, moon, and stars bowing down to him. And his brothers, who have already been jealous of him, rightly interpret that those dreams mean that they will be bowing down to him. And that enrages them. They form a plot to kill him. But Reuben convinces them to sell him as a slave. Reuben convinces them to put him in a pit, and Judah convinces them to sell him as a slave to Midianite traders. So his life is spared, but he's sold, and in turn, those traders sell him to Potiphar in Egypt. But the Lord is with him there, blesses his work, and he is put in charge of Potiphar's household, as we remember, until Potiphar's wife falsely accuses him of trying to take advantage of her, and he's thrown into prison. So Joseph's story up to chapter 40 seems to be a story of increased, narrowed circumstances. First he's the favored son, then he's in a pit, then he's a slave, then he rises to administration to be second in Potiphar's household, but then he's accused falsely and he's put into prison. But we've also seen God's providence at work in the previous chapters. First, in the directions Joseph received to find his brothers when he was wandering in Shechem. We see God's providence in Reuben stepping in to keep Joseph alive. We see God's providence in that strange narrative that comes in between Joseph's story, the narrative of Judah and Tamar, who, through an unusual set of circumstances, have a child that will be in the line of Christ. But where our story begins, chapter 40 tonight, Joseph is still in jail. So I'll begin reading at the beginning of chapter 40. Sometime after this, the cupbearer of the king of Egypt and his baker committed an offense against their lord, the king of Egypt. And Pharaoh was angry with his two officials, the chief cupbearer and the chief baker. And he put them in custody in the house of the captain of the guard, in the prison where Joseph was confined. The captain of the guard appointed Joseph to be with them, and he attended them. They continued for some time in custody. So let's start with that first phrase, some time after this. So Joseph is not in the situation where, since he'd been falsely accused, he was let go the next day. He's not in a situation where he's waiting for a trial, where he'll be able to plead his case and hopefully be able to be let out of prison. At this point, Joseph hasn't been in prison for some time, and he doesn't have any means of getting out of prison, except for God to do something to let him out. Now, what is happening to Joseph's character during this time? This some time later. We don't hear his prayer life like we get to eavesdrop in on David's, but we can assume he's not spending his time complaining and in bitterness, because we're going to see his character reveal itself, especially in the next chapter as he's talking with Pharaoh. So the cupbearer and the baker are put into contact with Joseph. The cupbearer was an official who often became a confidant of the king and wielded considerable political power. Nehemiah held this post when he was in Persia. So it was a position of political power. The baker could have been the head of the bakers who had privileges in the royal court. So these are both people who have some authority, and Joseph has been put into contact with them. And one night, verse 5, they both dreamed, the cupbearer and the baker of the king of Egypt, who were confined in the prison, each his own dream, and each dream with its own interpretation. Matthew Henry says, observe the special providence of God, which filled the heads of these two prisoners with unusual dreams, such as made extraordinary impressions upon them, and carried with them evidences of a divine origin, both in one night. God has immediate access to the spirits of men. And they are troubled. So God, where there is nothing that Joseph can do to get himself out of the situation that he's in, God sends these two men into his life and gives them both dreams on the same night. He has access to the spirits of men, as Matthew Henry says. Picking up in verse 6, when Joseph came to them in the morning, he saw that they were troubled. So he asked Pharaoh's officers who were with them in custody in his master's house, why are your faces downcast today? They said to him, we have had dreams, and there is no one to interpret them. And Joseph said to them, do not interpretations belong to God? Please tell them to me. So the chief cupbearer told his dream to Joseph and said to him, in my dream there was a vine before me, and on the vine there were three branches. As soon as it budded, its blossoms shot forth, and the clusters ripened into grapes. Pharaoh's cup was in my hand, and I took the grapes and pressed them into Pharaoh's cup and placed the cup in Pharaoh's hand. Then Joseph said to him, this is its interpretation. The three branches are 3 days. In 3 days Pharaoh will lift up your head and restore you to your office, and you shall place Pharaoh's cup in his hand as formerly, when you were his cupbearer. Only remember me when it is well with you, and please do me the kindness to mention me to Pharaoh, and so get me out of this house. For I was indeed stolen out of the land of the Hebrews, and here also I have done nothing that they should put me into the pit. We see here Joseph's concern for the cupbearer and the baker. He notices that they are troubled, and he asks them. This is one sign that he has not become bitter and self-focused. When he sees the trouble that they're displaying, he asks, what is the matter? And he also acknowledges the Lord. Do not dreams belong to God? So he is witnessing in his situation, and he is also displaying humility, right? God is the one who sent the dreams. By extenuation, God is the one who can provide the interpretation, and he does. He gives the cupbearer a good interpretation, a good outcome. Pharaoh is going to lift up your head. You're going to be restored to your position, lifted up and restored. And then he goes on to ask the cupbearer for help. He pleads his case. He tells the cupbearer that he has been a victim of unjust circumstances, right? And this shows that we can acknowledge that when things are unfair or difficult, that doesn't mean that we've lost a grip on our faith. It doesn't mean that we have fallen into the complaining pit. We can acknowledge that without going over and complaining and separating ourselves from faith in the Lord and his goodness. So then, hearing that good interpretation, the baker asks for his, starting in verse 16. When the chief baker saw that the interpretation was favorable, he said to Joseph, "I also had a dream. There were three cake baskets on my head, and in the innermost basket there were all sorts of baked food for Pharaoh, but the birds were eating it out of the basket on my head." And Joseph answered and said, "This is its interpretation. The three baskets are 3 days. In 3 days Pharaoh will lift up your head from you and hang you on a tree, and the birds will eat the flesh from you." So the baker gets one phrase that's shared with the cupbearer: Pharaoh will lift up your head. But he also gets the phrase, "from you." So he is not going to survive when he is called in 3 days and goes before Pharaoh. Selhammer points out that on the face of it, the dreams seem similar. Joseph is given discernment of their different outcomes, and he does this because he has the Spirit of God. Pharaoh acknowledges this in the next chapter, verse 38, and also that he's been given discernment and wisdom in chapter 41, verse 39. On the third day, verse 20, which was Pharaoh's birthday, he made a feast for all his servants, and lifted up the head of the chief cupbearer and the head of the chief baker among his servants. So that is just what Joseph said would happen. He restored the chief cupbearer to his position, and he placed the cup in Pharaoh's hand. But he hanged the chief baker, as Joseph had interpreted to him. Yet the chief cupbearer did not remember Joseph, but forgot him. So everything happens as Joseph said, but it was not his ticket out. He is forgotten. Another injustice. Someone can help him, and they don't. One commentator points out that this second forgot has a reiterative or emphasizing function. He was not remembered. He was forgotten. He was not remembered. He was forgotten. Matthew Henry points out, we cannot expect too little from man, nor too much from God. We cannot expect too little from man. And we've all been in a position where we really trusted somebody, and they disappointed us. Fortunately, Matthew Henry's also correct. We can't expect too much from God. God will always give us abundantly more than we could ask or think. And we're about to see that in chapter 41 in Joseph's case. So when we are disappointed in people, when people forget us or treat us unfairly, that is not where our hope is ultimately placed anyway. It is in God, who has been with Joseph and who has blessed others. He's blessed Joseph and he's blessed others because of Joseph. And that is going to continue in the next chapter. Now, what if Joseph had been released? What if the cupbearer had remembered Joseph right then, and Joseph had been released and gotten what he wanted? He says in verse 15, "I was stolen out of the land of the Hebrews." So it is reasonable to assume that what he wanted was to go back home, back to familiar circumstances, back to being the favored son, to being free, not being a slave or a prisoner. What if he had gotten what he wanted? He would not have been there for chapter 41. So God keeps Joseph in this prison because he is going to be needed in chapter 41, and the reversal is coming for him. All right, so let's keep reading in chapter 41. After 2 whole years, Pharaoh dreamed that he was standing by the Nile. I want us to stop right there. The first phrase, after 2 whole years. Now, I don't know about you, but we have been practicing social distancing in our family for about a week now, and I am already checking all the grass, you know, how long is this going to last? When is it reasonable to assume we'll be able to get together with other families? When will the stores get back to normal? When will life get back to normal? And that's been 1 week. Joseph has already experienced some time in prison at the beginning of chapter 40, and now we have 2 full years in chapter 41. And we are quickly going to read the end of the story, but I just don't want us to gloss over 2 full years. After 2 whole years, Pharaoh dreamed that he was standing by the Nile. And behold, there came up out of the Nile 7 cows, attractive and plump, and they fed in the reed grass. And behold, 7 other cows, ugly and thin, came up out of the Nile after them, and stood by the other cows on the bank of the Nile. And the ugly, thin cows ate up the 7 attractive, plump cows. And Pharaoh awoke. And he fell asleep and dreamed a second time. And behold, 7 ears of grain, plump and good, were growing on 1 stalk. And behold, after them sprouted 7 ears, thin and blighted by the east wind. And the thin ears swallowed up the 7 plump, full ears. And Pharaoh awoke, and behold, it was a dream. So in the morning his spirit was troubled. And he sent and called for all the magicians of Egypt and all its wise men. Pharaoh told them his dreams, but there was none who could interpret them to Pharaoh. One commentary points out that these dreams pertain to the economy of Egypt. So these dreams are striking at the heart of Egypt. The first one, where the cows come up out of the Nile, you know, the Nile is supposed to be the source of life for Egypt. It is providing them water and also a source for their agriculture. So the commentary goes on to say, because of the Nile River, the land of Egypt weathered all kinds of famines. There was usually grain in Egypt, and if there was grain and water, the livestock would flourish. These 2 dreams, however, indicated that poverty would overtake plenty, and that the blessing of the herd and the field would cease. Verse 9. Then the chief cupbearer said to Pharaoh, I remember my offenses today. So, pausing again, at the right time, the cupbearer remembers. No, God has not forgotten Joseph this whole time. And now the time has come for Joseph's situation to be reversed, for his good and for the good of Egypt and for the good of the whole world and for the good of his family. So the cupbearer remembers and says, when Pharaoh was angry with his servants and put me and the chief baker in custody in the house of the captain of the guard, we dreamed on the same night, he and I, each having a dream with his own interpretation. A young Hebrew was there with us, a servant of the captain of the guard. When we told him, he interpreted our dreams to us, giving an interpretation to each man according to his dream. And as he interpreted to us, so it came about. I was restored to my office, and the baker was hanged. Then Pharaoh sent and called Joseph, and they quickly brought him out of the pit. And when he had shaved himself and changed his clothes, he came in before Pharaoh. And Pharaoh said to Joseph, I have had a dream, and there is no one who can interpret it. I have heard it said of you that when you hear a dream, you can interpret it. Joseph answered Pharaoh, it is not in me. God will give Pharaoh a favorable answer. So we see the humility of Joseph. He's not claiming that he has the wisdom and the discernment, but that God has given it to him. So he is witnessing now to Pharaoh. And now we're going to get the dreams again. Pharaoh is going to tell them to Joseph. And I want you to listen for ways that Pharaoh reveals the troubling of his spirit that have come from these dreams. So this is slightly different because now Pharaoh is telling Joseph. And so I want you to listen for those differences and what they tell us about Pharaoh's state of mind here. Verse Then Pharaoh said to Joseph, this is verse 17, "Behold, in my dream I was standing on the banks of the Nile. Seven cows, plump and attractive, came up out of the Nile and fed in the reed grass. Seven other cows came up after them, poor and ugly and thin, such as I had never seen in all the land of Egypt. And the thin, ugly cows ate up the first seven plump cows, but when they had eaten them, no one would have known that they had eaten them, for they were still as ugly as at the beginning. Then I awoke. I also saw in my dream seven ears growing on one stalk, full and good. Seven ears, withered, thin, and blighted by the east wind, sprouted after them. And the thin ears swallowed up the seven good ears. And I told it to the magicians, but there was no one who could explain it to me." So we see Pharaoh's state of mind in this very ugly. And the horror of when they had eaten them, no one would have known that they had eaten them. So the thin cows don't get better when they eat the other cows. They're still as thin as ever. And he mentions, "I've never seen anything like this." Right. Then Joseph said to Pharaoh, verse 25, "The dreams of Pharaoh are one." Now there's someone who can interpret it. "God has revealed to Pharaoh what he is about to do." Remember from the last chapter, Matthew Henry's comment that God has access to the spirits of men. I'm not sure that I mentioned that. Matthew Henry comments on the cupbearer and the baker's dreams that God has access to their spirits. And he has access to the spirits of kings and access to the spirits of the chief cupbearer and the baker. And he has access. He is able to turn the hearts of men as he pleases, and Pharaoh as well. So Joseph goes on to say, "The seven good cows are 7 years, and the seven good ears are 7 years. The dreams are one. The seven lean and ugly cows that came up after them are 7 years, and the seven empty ears, blighted by the east wind, are also 7 years of famine. It is as I told Pharaoh, God has shown to Pharaoh what he is about to do. There will come 7 years of great plenty throughout all the land of Egypt. But after them there will arise 7 years of famine, and all the plenty will be forgotten in the land of Egypt. The famine will consume the land, and the plenty will be unknown in the land by reason of the famine that will follow, for it will be very severe. And the doubling of Pharaoh's dream means that a thing is fixed by God, and God will shortly bring it about. Now therefore let Pharaoh select a discerning and wise man, and set him over the land of Egypt. Let Pharaoh proceed to appoint overseers over the land and take one-fifth of the produce of the land of Egypt during the seven plentiful years. And let them gather all the food of these good years that are coming and store up grain under the authority of Pharaoh for food in the cities. And let them keep it. That food shall be a reserve for the land against the 7 years of famine that are to occur in the land of Egypt, so that the land may not perish through the famine." Selhammer here says that Joseph not only was able to interpret the dreams, which no one else could do, but he advised Pharaoh how to prepare for what was to come. So Joseph is blessing Pharaoh in two ways here, providing the interpretation and also giving him good advice on how to handle the situation that's coming based on those dreams. And Matthew Henry also points out the character of God in sending provision. He's going to send years of plenty before the years of famine, and this shows his good character. His good character in sending provision of 7 good years, and also Joseph, who has wisdom in knowing how to best prepare for what is to come. Both of those things come from the Lord. So picking up in verse 37, "This proposal pleased Pharaoh and all his servants. And Pharaoh said to his servants, 'Can we find a man like this in whom is the Spirit of God?' Then Pharaoh said to Joseph, 'Since God has shown you all this, there is none so discerning and wise as you are. You shall be over my house, and all my people shall order themselves as you command. Only as regards the throne will I be greater than you.' And Pharaoh said to Joseph, 'See, I have set you over all the land of Egypt. Now remember, this morning Joseph woke up in prison, and now he is second over all the land of Egypt. Verse 42. Then Pharaoh took the signet ring from his hand and put it on Joseph's hand, and clothed him in garments of fine linen and put a gold chain around his neck. And he made him ride in his second chariot. And they called out before him, "Bow the knee." Thus he set him over all the land of Egypt. Moreover, Pharaoh said to Joseph, "I am Pharaoh, and without your consent, no one shall lift up hand or foot in all the land of Egypt." And Pharaoh called Joseph's name Zaphnath-Paneah. And he gave him in marriage Asenath, the daughter of Potipharah, priest of On. So Joseph went out over the land of Egypt. So Joseph becomes the grand vizier of Egypt. This is the highest official to serve Pharaoh. And he had been separated from his family. He had been cast out. He had been sold. And now he has been given a wife. Verse 46. Joseph was 30 years old when he entered the service of Pharaoh, king of Egypt. And Joseph went out from the presence of Pharaoh and went through all the land of Egypt. During the 7 plentiful years, the earth produced abundantly, and he gathered up all the food of these 7 years, which occurred in the land of Egypt, and put the food in the cities. He put in every city the food in the fields around it. And Joseph stored up grain in great abundance, like the sand of the sea, until he ceased to measure it, for it could not be measured. So we see the great fruitfulness of the land. And of course, Joseph is storing it up. He has the wisdom and the discernment to know what to do. And then we see the fruitfulness in his own life. Before the year of famine came, 2 sons were born to Joseph. Asenath, the daughter of Potipharah, priest of On, bore them to him. Joseph called the name of the firstborn Manasseh, for, he said, "God has made me forget all my hardship and all my father's house." The name of the second he called Ephraim, for God has made me fruitful in the land of my affliction. These names are significant not only in their meanings, but also that they are Hebrew names. So even though he has married the daughter of a priest, he has given them Hebrew names. One commentator says the giving of this name to his son Manasseh shows that Joseph retained his heritage and faith. So when he says, "I've forgotten my hardship and all my father's house," he's not turned his back on his faith. It shows that a brighter future was in store for him. And then Ephraim, of course, means God has made me fruitful in the land of my affliction. And that, of course, reiterates the faith that he has displayed this whole time. God has made me fruitful in the land of my affliction. So what is this fruitfulness? He's been given a family, a wife and sons. He's been given a vocation to save the land of Egypt. And he is being shown a glimpse of how his experience and all the wisdom and discernment that God has given him are being put to use. Okay, so then next, in verses 53 to 57, the crisis hits. The 7 years of plenty that occurred in the land of Egypt came to an end, and the 7 years of famine began to come, as Joseph had said. There was famine in all lands. But in all the land of Egypt there was bread. When all the land of Egypt was famished, the people cried to Pharaoh for bread. Pharaoh said to all the Egyptians, "Go to Joseph. What he says to you, do." So when the famine had spread over all the land, Joseph opened all the storehouses and sold to the Egyptians, for the famine was severe in the land of Egypt. Moreover, all the earth came to Egypt to Joseph to buy grain, because the famine was severe over all the earth. So this is a worldwide disaster. But in God's providence, those 7 years of plenty and in Joseph being there to tell Pharaoh what to do and to implement it, they are prepared. In the chapters to follow, we are going to see the fulfillment of Joseph's dreams in chapter 37. And we are going to see the relationship with his brothers and his father come to culmination. We see continuation in the chapters we've just studied from the previous chapter. One additional one that really comes out is suffering in this chapter. The suffering of Joseph in those long time periods of being stuck in prison. We see it in what he says to the cupbearer when he acknowledges what has been done to him. And we see it in how he's named his son, Ephraim. God has made me fruitful in the land of my affliction. So the text does not shy away from the difficulty, the suffering, the affliction that Joseph has experienced, and the suffering that is coming in the 7 years of famine. The word severe in that last verse, verse 57, also means heavy. There's a severity, there's a heaviness, and there's suffering that is caused by this famine. We also see God's timing, right? Keeping Joseph in that prison where the cupbearer is going to be. Keeping Joseph in prison until Pharaoh has his dreams, and Joseph then is quickly brought out, and in that same day made second in command. God's perfect timing. And of course, that cannot be separated from God's providence that we see all throughout this chapter. We see it in the dreams that everyone has. The cupbearer, the baker, and Pharaoh. We see it in Pharaoh himself. We see the witness that he's given. He's given not only through Joseph wisdom of what to do for his kingdom, but also he is given access to what Joseph, part of what Joseph knows about the Lord. And he says, Pharaoh says in chapter 41, verse 38, "Can we find a man like this in whom is the Spirit of God?" And then, "Since God has shown you all this, there is none so discerning and wise." So Joseph has blessed Pharaoh spiritually in his encounter with him, as well as in this physical provision that's going to be for the country, for all countries, for his family. And we see God's providence in bringing good fruit out of suffering. So I want to close by saying that may God make us fruitful in our own suffering, in our own various trials. As James says, "Count it all joy, my brothers, when you meet trials of various kinds. For you know that the testing of your faith produces steadfastness. And let steadfastness have its full effect, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking in nothing." God is able to make us fruitful in affliction. He is able to make us perfect. He is able to make us complete, lacking nothing. And that is the future we can all stake our hope on when we are in Christ.